I'm in a hopper, coming up from the Nairobi Industries base at Shackleton Crater. I need a navigation fix, pronto. No reply. She looked down at the bleak lunar landscape sliding by, trying to remember landmarks from her flight into Shackleton. Nothing stood out. It all looked the same. Bare rock pitted by innumerable craters ranging from little dimples to holes big enough to swallow a city. Rugged hills, all barren and rounded by eons of meteors sandpapering them to worn, tired smoothness. And rocks and boulders strewn everywhere, like toys left behind by a careless child. Pancho felt worn and tired, too. Her mind was going fuzzy. It would be so good to just fold up and go to sleep. Even the hard metal deck of the hopper looked inviting to her. Stop it, she commanded herself. Stay awake. Find the base's radio beacon. Use it to guide you in. She played the hopper's radio receiver up and down the frequency scale, seeking the automated homing beacon from the Malapert base. Nothing. Feeling something like panic simmering in her guts, Pancho thought, maybe I'm heading in a completely wrong direction. Maybe I'm so way off that... A steady, warm tone suddenly issued from her helmet earphones. Pancho couldn't have been more thrilled if the world's finest singer had begun to serenade her. This is Pancho Lane, she said, her voice rough, her throat dry. I need a navigational fix, pronto. A heartbeat's hesitation. Then a calm tenor voice said to her, Malapert base here, Ms. Lane. We have you on our radar. You're heading 17 degrees west of us. I'm feeding correction data to your nav computer. Pancho felt the hopper's tiny maneuvering thruster push the ungainly bird sideways a bit. Her legs felt weak, rubbery. Bird's on automatic now, she thought. I can relax. I can lay down and... A red light on the control console glared at her like an evil eye, and the hopper's computer announced, Propellant cutoff. Main engine shutdown. Pancho's reply was a heartfelt, Shit!
Rush fire. Fuchs backed slowly along the brick path, a nearly spent laser pistol in each hand, his eyes reflecting the lurid flames spreading across the wide garden that filled the grotto.
Burn! He exulted. Let everything burn. His garden, his house, Aunt Humphreys himself. Let the fire burn him to death. Let him roast in his own hell.
Coughing, he finally turned and sprinted heavily up the path toward the airlock hatch that they had come in through. The others were already there. Nodon was even standing on his own feet, although he looked pale, shaky. Fuchs was panting as he came up to them.
Hard to breathe, he gasped.
Amarjago wasted no time on the obvious. The airlock is sealed. The emergency code doesn't work. Fuchs stared at her flat, normally emotionless face. Now she was staring back at him, cold accusation in her eyes. Sanja said, The fire. It's eating up the oxygen.
Get the airlock open, Fuchs commanded. Nodon!
Try all the emergency codes.
I have, Nodon said, almost wailing. No use. No use. Fuchs leaned his back against the heavy steel hatch and slid down onto his rump, suddenly exhausted. Most of the garden was ablaze now, roaring with flames that crawled up the trees and spread across the flowering bushes, burning, destroying everything as they advanced. Gray smoke billowed up and slithered along the rough rock ceiling, as if trying to find an opening, the slightest pore, a way to escape the inferno of this death trap.
Humphreys was coldly logical now. The closet in his bedroom was built to serve as an emergency airlock. There was even a spacesuit stashed in there, although Humphreys had never put it on. The earthbound architect who had designed the mansion had been rather amused that Humphreys insisted on such precautions. But the knowing smirk on his face disappeared when Humphreys bought out his firm, fired him, and sent him packing to Earth. The mansion had been completed by others, and the emergency airlock built to the tightest possible specifications. Knowing that there were two extra tanks of breathable air in there, Humphreys headed for his closet. What are you doing? Farrar screamed at him. We've got to get out. You get yourself out, he said icily, remembering the slap she had given him. I'll stay here until this all blows over. He slid open the door to his closet. All that Farrar could see was a row of clothing neatly arrayed on hangers. What have you got in there? She demanded from the other side of the bedroom. She no longer looked smoothly sultry, enticing. Her dark hair was a disheveled tumble, her white robe rumpled, hanging half open. She seemed frightened, confused, far from alluring. Enough air to last for a day or more, he said, smiling at her. Oh, thank God, she said, rushing toward the closet. Humphreys touched the stud set in the closet's interior doorframe, and an airtight panel slid quickly shut. He saw the shocked surprise on her face just before the panel shot home and closed her off from his view. He heard her banging on the steel panel. Martin, open the door! Let me in! He walked back deeper into his closet, trying to shut out her yammering. Pushing a row of slacks aside, he saw the spacesuit standing against the closet's back wall, like a medieval suit of armor. Martin, please, let me in! So you can slap me again? He muttered. Go fry.
The chief of the emergency crew nearly dropped his handheld when he recognized who was coming up the corridor toward them. Mr. Stavanger! Hello, Pete, Stavanger said after a quick glance at the crew chief's name tag. What's the situation here? Stavanger could see that a team of 3 men and 4 women were assembling a portable airlock and sealing it over the hatch that opened onto the grotto. The crew chief said as much. How long will this take? Stavanger asked. Another 10 minutes, maybe 12. Once it's ready, how many people can you take through it at one time? The crew chief shook his head. It's only big enough for 2. There are at least 30 people in there, Stavanger said. They're running out of oxygen pretty quickly. We got another crew working on the water lines. If we can get the sprinklers working, we ought to be able to put the fire out pretty quick. But those people need air to breathe. I know, said the crew chief. I know.
Fuchs saw dark-clad figures stumbling up the path, coughing, staggering. He scrambled to his feet and picked up one of the nearby spent pistols. Stop where you are, he shouted, coughing himself. The closest man tossed his pistol into the bushes. Let us out, he yelled. The fire! The others behind him also threw their guns away. They all lurched towards Fuchs, coughing, rubbing at their eyes. Behind them, the flames inched across the flowers and grass, climbed nimbly up the trunk of a tree. Its crown of leaves burst into flame. The hatch is locked, Fuchs told them. They're all trapped in here. The security guards didn't believe him. Their leader rushed to the hatch, tapped frantically at the keyboard panel. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, he growled. Of all the son of a bitch fuck-ups! It's automatic, I imagine, said Fuchs resignedly. Nothing we can do about it. The security guard stared at him. But they should have emergency teams, something. At that moment, a voice rumbled through the heavy hatch. This is Cellini Emergency Services. Is anybody there? Rap on the hatch. Fuchs almost leaped with sudden joy and hope. He banged the butt of his pistol against the steel hatch. Okay, we're setting up an airlock. Once it's ready, we'll be able to start taking you out. How many of you are there? Fuchs counted swiftly and then rapped on the hatch 11 times, thinking, we might live through this after all. We might get out of this alive.
Flight plans. Pancho knew she had to think swiftly, but the fog of fatigue and radiation sickness made her feel as if she were wrapped in heavy, wet blankets. Propellant bingo, she said to herself. There's still enough juice for an automated landing, but not enough to reach the base. Override the automatics and push this bird as far as she'll go? Do that, and you won't land. You'll crash on the landing pad, if you get that far. Let the bird coast, come down wherever it reaches. Do that, and you'll land in the middle of nowhere. No, you won't land. You'll crash on the rocks. We have a good track on you, Ms. Lane, and we're getting some satellite imagery as well, said the Malapert's controller's voice.